Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sangham namassami. Somebody recommended a book to me, and it's about the plasticity of the brain. Probably some of you know about that, how learning works, how humans learn, and how the brain works in that. I've not finished it yet, but it is already interesting, some of the ideas I had heard about it. The way the brain organizes itself with neurons firing and synapses meeting and stuff like that, and how it's possible to change. And for some years it was thought that the brain was a fixed sort of map, and once the pathways were in place, it wasn't possible to, it's not possible to change those. But later studies have shown just how flexible it is, and how if you really want to stave off Alzheimer's and the problems of old age, how give a lot of effort to learning something, and giving the effort to learn something in a persistent and consistent way, one will actually learn and adjust the brain so that it can actually learn other things as well. One of the recommendations is learning a new language in your old and middle age. I find that heartening. I find that heartening because, you know, part of the Buddha's encouragement is that we can train. We can train, we can shift things, that human beings can train themselves. That training is what has, and that willingness to train has been what has supported the Buddha Sasana these 2,600 years or so. What the Buddha taught was the Dhamma Vinaya. He revealed the Dhamma and taught the Vinaya, and it's the Dhamma Vinaya that has been handed on and is the teacher in the place of the Buddha. And the Buddha was about to pass away. Ananda said, well, who's going to lead the community? Who's going to lead us after your Parinibbana? And the Buddha said, let the Dhamma of Vinaya be your teacher. And certainly for me, the Dhamma has been inspiring. And I can remember reading Dhamma books at university. Ram Dass, Be Here Now. Some of you will remember that if you're old enough. And the Dhammapada and other Dhamma books, but it was when I saw the Vinaya that I faith in the possibilities really came about, when I saw how humans were practicing the Vinaya. And when I saw forest monks, that faith really came about. And I saw how a form, a structure that people had trained themselves in persistently over years had transformed them, and then how they in turn, and over time, hearing more about it, how they in turn reinforced the form and gave back to it. At the time of the Lord Buddha, there were arahants, enlightened beings, who thought that it wasn't necessary for them to follow the Vinaya. And the Buddha, because even enlightened beings make mistakes, and the Buddha criticized them and said, it is for the sake of future generations that you support the Vinaya, you support the training, so that something can be carried forward. The Vinaya carries us when we're young, when we're new, into the training. The encouragement is to follow the Vinaya very strictly, and that will support one, keep one safe, follow the smallest rules, train in the most complete way. And then the encouragement then is, as one gets more fluent and confident in it, it's not to just discard it, but then also to hand it on to for future, so that the training can be carried forward. And because the Vinaya is about beautiful behavior in body and speech, and that beautiful behavior in body and speech and training and knowing one's intention is so helpful. And part of our training here, because the Vinaya is not only the whole of the basic rules and that, and part of it is also just the way that we do things, and one of the ways that we do things is this thing of chanting together. And for some of you, maybe the chanting seems very peculiar, and I can certainly remember sitting and thinking, well, first of all, I thought, well, I'm never going to bow. I can remember that. I've repeated that in a few occasions, that's something that I've remembered. I don't bow to golden images. And it's definitely going to hell if you're going to do that. And then learning and wishing to learn how to do that, and then asking how to do that. I can remember that shift in me when I realized that what I was interested in was what was happening internally, and what the act of lowering one's head to somebody or something, what that meant. And how that affected me, and what I was interested in was the resistance, and then later on, of course, the joy in doing it and wishing to do it, because there's something nice about saying it's not up to me, and I just want to learn from this. And particularly bowing to the Lord Buddha, it's the sense is I really wish to learn from this moment, this form, and what I'm doing right now. And then the chanting that we do is an interesting little thing, because it's a made up thing. It's a made up thing. It's not something that was probably even done at the time of the Lord Buddha. The evening chanting, the morning chanting, is not something that was probably done at the time of the Lord Buddha. It's something that was put together quite recently, actually, in Buddhist history. It was the form of the morning and evening chanting, as it is in Pali, I think was put together by Ajahn Buddhadasa down in the south of Thailand, which is Ajahn Sukhacitto's first teacher. So he put together that quite elaborate morning and evening chanting as something that was done, and then he also translated it into Thai. Before that, there wasn't chanting in Thai, and I had heard about this, that the chanting was translated into Thai, and when I heard that as a layman and as an Anagarika, I thought, I really, really hope they never translate it into English. Because it's going to sound really strange. And it still sounds really strange. But and in Thai it sounds really weird, because the Thai that's used is very, very flowery Thai. And many Thais don't even really use that anymore, that style of Thai. But it does have meaning, and then eventually they translated it into English, and then we have it in English, and you know, when one chants it, it does sound strange if one actually just thinks about the meaning. You know, there are parts of it that are quite beautiful and that, but there are, you know, for each of the triple gem, we say, it is my only refuge. So there seems to be a contradiction there. You know, for each of them, we say, this is my only refuge. Yet in it gives us an indication of the wholeheartedness with which it is possible to go for refuge, go wholeheartedly, so that it is at the time of actually saying, this is my only refuge, and actually put one's whole heart into it, necessary, actually, in the end. It's, you know, if one's actually going to gain confidence, then it has to be done wholeheartedly. It has to be the sense that this is the most important thing. If one really wishes to, to go back to this thing of programming and changing the pathways in the mind, one of the things they've learned about how those pathways change in the mind is that if one does things half-heartedly or without full attention, then the pathways in the mind do not change. The pathways do not shift. The neurons do not start rearranging themselves. The way that things happen, it doesn't happen completely. And, there has to be an actual full-on commitment for the brain to actually shift, to actually learn something new. It has to be complete. There has to be full awareness and full attention on something. Multitasking, unfortunately, doesn't work for retraining the brain. It has to be single-minded and persistent, which I think is again interesting. So in actually doing something, to actually do it full on and full heartedly. Many of the famous Ajahns will tell you that you can't do this. You can't do this if you really want to produce some transformation. You can't do this half-heartedly. It actually has to be a matter of life and death. It has to be tears and struggle for it to actually, for the transformation to actually work. And certainly if you wish to learn the chants and actually commit them to heart, then they actually have to be taken to heart. And there has to be some sort of real effort there. And the chanting, learning the chanting by heart is so, I found, so revealing. I do remember as a young adult and as a student thinking that learning by heart, learning rote learning, was stupid and unintelligent and a lower form of learning, learning something by rote, was considered in my day something that was what stupid people did. Learn something by heart, learn something by rote, learn something just following, just learning a pattern. And I also thought that it was not possible for me to do. I can remember thinking that very clearly. I will never be able to learn anything by heart, because the little bits of poetry that I'd managed to learn, I'd also forgotten by the time I became a young adult. And so when I joined the community, I sincerely thought that this was impossible. But I thought I would at least give it a go. And so I did learn the easiest chant to learn. Yandu nimittang avamangalancha yoja manapo. Anybody who's turned up the chanting book will see that that's one of the shortest chants that you can possibly learn. And it's three things and you only have to change one word each time. So it's about three lines and one word is changed each time. So I learned that. It took me a full day of obsession to learn. And I thought, well, I can do it. So that was the start, and then I thought, well, I'll learn something that I want to learn, and the next was, I think, the Karaniya Metta Sutta. And this was as an Anagarika. And I started to learn what it takes to learn something by heart. And of course, what you first find out, if you want to do something like that, is what stops you. What stops you? What's getting in the way? And that is the start of Dhammanusati, as you probably have heard, is the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And the first aspect of Dhammanusati, which is very clear, is the hindrances. The first of the Dhammanusati is the hindrances. So what stops you concentrating on something? And that's very, very interesting. You start to see the tendency to feel averse, or the tendency to just want to distract yourself and get lost, the tendency to feel restless, the tendency just to want to go to sleep, or the tendency to think, well, I don't know what to do, and I don't know how it works. So you see all of that incredibly clearly, And that is incredibly useful, because you start to, at least I did, I started to know how this mind worked, and then I also started to see how the thing linked up, how memory worked, and how things got in there. I'm still, you know, people think that I know a lot of the chants and I know them very well, but it's actually not incredibly true. I know some of them a little bit, and I've put an incredible amount of effort into some things. I don't find it easy. And I've never found it easy. But I do know what it need, what's necessary to do it. And if I do make that commitment to do it, then I know that it can be done. So I don't have that doubt anymore. I just know that it just requires effort on my part, and I have confidence in that, but it's not not necessarily something that comes easily to me. But I do and am prepared to put that effort in, because if one does put the effort in, then something does shift, and then it is something again that can be offered on. And when one is carried by the form, then one can relax, and similarly with the chanting, one can relax sometimes with the chanting, and just go with it and let it carry you, which is very nice. It's like being like a form carrying you. You're confident with it, and there's something beautiful about being held by a form. It won't carry you forever, because if you don't put some effort and energy into it and actually give it more strength, then it will actually just fall apart. So there are times when you really have to give yourself to it, and that's very beautiful, as you give yourself to the meaning and you give yourself to the present moment as the chanting happens, and that also helps. We hope others to carry it forward in future, so the whole thing is carried on, something for future generations, something given back, there's something wonderful about that. You give forward something that's been given to you, you give forward to others. And, you know, in the evening chanting this evening, that if you read those words, that the English, there is a lot of lovely meaning in that reflection, those reflections on the Triple Gem, the recollection, and then the supreme praise. There's something very just extremely beautiful, because it is the most beautiful refuge for human beings, the refuge in the Triple Gem, the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. There is no other refuge that is equal to that. And the Buddha is my excellent refuge. It's also interesting to notice the different qualities and to dwell on those. It's helpful to remember something by heart, because if you do get drowsy ever in your meditation, or if your mind wanders ever in your meditation, maybe you never get drowsy in your meditation, maybe your mind never wanders and you're always supremely present. But if you do, like mine does sometimes, and then it's helpful to have something by heart that you can actually turn over in your heart and used to uplift your heart, to recollect the qualities of the Triple Gem, is one of the 40 objects of meditation mentioned in the Visuddhimagga and in the suttas. So it's worthwhile. It's also a standard way of getting over drowsiness, is to actually contemplate the Dhamma and turn it over and remember Dhamma that one has remembered. So see if one can remember the 9 qualities of the Buddha, the 6 qualities of the Dhamma, what are the 4 kinds of noble beings, the 4 pairs of noble beings, you know, to actually run through those if you do. If your mind happens to wander in your meditation, or your mind does, you do happen to get a little bit drowsy sometimes, to actually have those present for you is helpful, and it can actually be a way of shifting your mood or your the sort of qualities of your jit, which is again citta nusati, the qualities of your heart. You can actually shift it, brighten it, shift it around. Of course, there are other ways of doing it as well, with the breath, or there are other ways of doing it with the posture or whatever. But you can actually do it with something that you've taken to heart, have in your heart, and can contemplate. It's a helpful thing to do. In the contemplation of all of this, the refuge, the supreme refuge, is the Buddha. That's why it's mentioned first. Awareness is what Lumpur always stresses, and that will clear the whole thing. Because if there's no knowing what's happening, then there's going to be pain. That is the paticca samuppada. If there's ignorance, there's dukkha. If you don't know what's going on, if you're not clear about what's going on, then there's going to be stress. If you know what's going on, the possibilities of stress are a lot less. You're not going to make more anyway. And one of the things that is often problematic is doubt, not knowing what's going on, and uncertainty and all of that, and not being clear, not being sure about oneself, about what to do, or about what's happening. And the way that most of us try to get over doubt is to try to get certainty. I want to be sure. I want to make sure. I want to get it absolutely right. I want to be sure that it's the right. But even with learning a chant, a very simple case, when one's learning a chant, there'll be times when you're learning a chant and you're not sure what the next phrase is, or the next word is. And I tell you, in my experience, there is, when you are chanting and you haven't got your book, okay? Because that's, if you're going to learn the chant, you don't use your book. You don't, it's pointless trying to learn the chant by chanting and reading the book. You've got to put the book down, and then you've got to know where you are. And then you come to the sense of, I don't know what's next. And there's no way of getting certainty, because if you don't open the book, there's no way of knowing what's next. But if you rest in awareness for enough at that moment, what comes next will be revealed. Now, if you have learnt it, even if you've learnt something, there's going to be times when you don't know what's happening next. And if you just rest in awareness for long enough, it will be revealed. You don't get over doubt by grabbing hold of certainty. You get over doubt by resting in awareness. There is no end to doubt by trying to make things certain. Trying to make things certain is a never-ending. Never-ending. The only way to get over doubt is by resting in awareness. And that is scary. Even when you're chanting the Bhadimokkha, it's a bit scary. At least you've got a backup there somewhere, but it's still a bit scary, because you've got to be able to get into that state of being able to just rest there. And trusting. That's a strong recommendation to you all. That you won't find a way out of doubt by trying to find certainty. Because it don't end that way. So that's probably enough for this evening. And I hope that encourages you to give some effort to shift those brain cells around. Don't be frightened that you're going to run out of space in your brain if you fill it with a chance. Actually, what happens if you learn something well, apparently, according to the brain surgeons, is that you actually get more efficient. You actually allow less of your brain cells to do the work that's necessary. When you're not sure and you haven't learned something well, you actually use more of your brain cells and create more confusion. But if you've learned something well, according to the brain cell theory people, you actually get the less brain cells are necessary to actually make things clear. They've done sort of experiments with all sorts of people, apparently. And this is what the book says, and it's what Ajahn Jayasaro recommended me to read. So I've been looking at it, and I thought, hey, that makes sense. The brain is plastic. The brain can be more efficient just through training. And it's not impossible. Not impossible. And I wish you all very well in your training for complete freedom from all confusion. Evang. Andamayandamakataya sadhu karanu.